Members, please take your seats. Okay, welcome back to Priorities Take Two. We broke for lunch with a main motion as amended, and Terry and Tom and Ellen hands up for wanting to potentially add other issues to the main motion as amended. So start with you, Terry, and Matt too.
So I made, since we broke for lunch, I just may have a clarifying question to make sure that because I think I was looking at the wrong table this morning, and I just wanted to make sure that the executive committee had approved the alternative catch advice thing that we passed in the groundfish committee under the multi-year part of it, multi-year part of their recommendations. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. That's all I needed to know. Thank you.
Tom? Ellen?
I'd like to bring up a motion that I had spoken of earlier. If I have a second, I will go into a tiny bit more detail. Do you want me to read the motion?
Please.
I move that the council remove the industry funding of observers from the FMAT process and set a priority to do an omnibus observer amendment. Do you want me to read the rationale? Or?
No, let's see if you get a second. Is there a second to Ellen's motion? Second by Dr. Pierce.
Okay, the rationale, as I said before, the process needs to be transparent. As I see it now, it is not. It hasn't been. I think that Dr. Karp may want to speak on what changes can be made on the process as it is, but I believe that we need to have industry and observer company input on how this goes forth, and there are issues that need to be discussed as far as the industry is concerned about randomness of the selection process and the certification of scales that are used for weighing. These things are really important to the industry, and every single amendment that we've talked about and every issue that we've talked about comes down to the point of measuring bycatch accurately, and this is an issue that I think there's very little maneuverability on as it stands. Thank you.
Before I go to Mary Beth and Frank and Bill, I just question for you is, do you have a proposal for what would go below the bar in order to move this above?
I do not.
Bill.
Thank you. First, I want to acknowledge that there are a number of concerns that are real concerns that the industry and other participants have in different aspects of the way the observer program functions. A lot of them are logistical issues that are very complex, but some of them also have to do with the sampling design, the way that observer coverage is obtained to meet requirements for various programs, and in some cases, conflicts or at least difficulties in resolving needs that support science at the same time as we're addressing needs that support management. So there's some very complex sampling challenges. The observer program has grown enormously in the last several years from one that was a relatively small and easy to manage and focused on a narrow range of objectives to something that is now important to everybody in this room in different ways and in the larger community. And I think it really is important to take stock for the Science Center to engage in a more holistic way to with the different stakeholders and interest groups, and to look very carefully at how we're doing what we're doing now, to be as transparent as we can be, to listen to people's concerns about operationally how we may be able to solve some of these problems, and these issues of cost, which are very complex, and which certainly I think deserve more deliberation. I don't know that trying to tie this into a council action is necessarily the right thing to do, but I'm certainly willing to work with all of our partners in figuring out a way for us to engage and to look in an analytic but also in a constructive way at all of these challenges.
John.
I'm not sure that I understand what Ellen's getting at here, because we have, as a priority that's been suggested by the Executive Committee, omnibus industry-funded monitoring amendment, NERO LEAD. And as was mentioned this morning, that's tied into the Herring Amendment with a tight timeline. And when you asked, Mr. Chair, what should come off or go below the line, Ellen, you said nothing comes below the line. So I don't know whether this motion would take that effort off or not. But so I'm just confused whether, if this motion passes, whether that would affect the work we're going to do to try and improve what we're trying to do with Herring or not.
Mary Beth.
So I think that, you know, when we went through the Herring Amendment, we made a recommendation near the end of the process that a working group be established by the agency that included industry, observer providers, council staff, and agency staff to look at how to implement what was recommended in that amendment and do that within a 12-month time period following the final rule. So that process didn't happen, and I expect because the agency felt they needed to disapprove it that they didn't move forward with that, perhaps. And we have this new omnibus amendment that the agency is leading, and it was described earlier as administrative in its nature, but in fact, and it is to a large extent, but it does implement for Herring and Mackerel. So I'm wondering, so I understand why this motion is here, but I'm wondering if a better process to not hold up omnibus and let the agency work in its current timetable would be for the council to consider establishing an observer committee that could advise the agency as they work through their omnibus that could be populated by those entities I mentioned before, industry, you know, council members, the agency, and providers. And they could also deal with the issues that Ellen raised that would not be part of the omnibus. Other regions in the country have standing observer committees that do just that, and I think Bill is familiar with. And they find that to be a helpful process in which to vet issues. I mean, the program, as been indicated, has grown tremendously, impacting more sectors in a variety of different ways. And I think they've tried to adapt as all this has gone on. But I think it could create a process for us. And so I'm tempted to make a motion to substitute here. And I would just, I guess, I keep asking Tom questions every time I speak. Is that something, Tom, that you think that we could possibly do? I was thinking probably wouldn't need a ton of support staff to put a group together and maybe move in that direction. So I'm looking for some feedback prior to making that motion.
Well, it's a little difficult for me to give you any feedback. It's a little unclear to me exactly what the scope of this proposed observer amendment is.
So if I could follow up, what I would suggest is not an amendment led by the council, to just put together more of an advisory group to discuss observer issues in general, including advising the agency as they do their work on the buses they currently are doing.
So how do we reconcile participation of the hearing committee dealing with the hearing management issues with this new observer committee working through the FMAT process? But to get back to your question, I think that this is actually going to take a considerable amount of staff time. The observer issues tend to be, particularly with in relation to sampling, tend to be highly technical and detailed. We on the staff don't always agree with the interpretations of the agency scientists on some of those things, and so I think you're going to want to hear those opinions at the committee level and not rely just on the technical support from the Science Center. So I think this will actually be a fairly extensive involvement. Particularly, it sounds like it's going to cut across all fisheries and not be just focused on either herring or groundfish, correct?
That is correct. And I am using, you know, the thought came to me as using an example from another region that has a standing committee like this, as issues come up in the observer program, that there's a place to have those discussions and provide advice. So I think, actually, Bill had his hand up. Maybe I should hear from him first.
Bill.
Thank you. The North Pacific's Observer Advisory Committee, which I think Mary Beth is speaking to, in some ways life is a lot simpler because there's fundamentally one FMP that all of the observer coverage works under. But in a way, that's a reason for having some kind of a forum for dealing with these competing needs across different FMPs. And perhaps that's part of Mary Beth's thinking. I know that, having participated and staffed a committee in the North Pacific, that it's actually been enormously constructive in coming up with some very creative ideas for solving some of the problems that plague this region as well. But it's not. I think it would be unwise to expect that it could bring quick solutions to some of the challenges that we face. That there's a need for some significant process as we collectively figure out what the observer program needs to look like as we move ahead.
Ellen?
I would be in favor of a substitution of that.
Tom?
Just looking at what the executive committee has put forward, we have several priorities relating to the herring part of our observer program. We have a herring committee. We have a priority of SBRM. We have an ad hoc SBRM committee that's going to be forming to provide input to the agency. And we have the observer omnibus that NERO is going to lead and that we're going to provide input to, I believe, as a committee of the entire council as needed. I think that should cover us. I don't see the formation of yet another committee really allowing us to move on any of these things much faster. I don't think that's going to get us there, and it's already overlapping and a little bit confusing for us all. So I would hope to support the executive committee's stance on this and move forward as we've outlined here.
Other council thoughts? Mary Beth.
So I'm going to make a motion to substitute. That would read, the council would establish an advisory observer committee that would be populated by council members, industry, and observer providers that would meet when staffing needs can be provided. Is that too fast, Karen? And just to Tom's point briefly, I think that it would do away with the need to have to create ad hoc committees to look at the SBRM and things like that. You'd have a committee that would meet as needed, and there's just a whole host of issues that come up relative to observer coverage that could be better served by a focus group.
Tom, are you raising your hand a second or a comment? Is there a second to the motion to substitute? Seconded by Ellen. Tom.
Well, I actually have to disagree. I don't think it would replace the need for an ad hoc committee of council members. It would, in fact, it would create a different committee, a different structure. So the council, as appointed, needs to provide input on some of these important initiatives or actions that the agency has taken the lead on, that's our responsibility as council members, not as third-party observer providers. So I think that's something else. I have no problem with the advisory panel for Herring including third-party providers or seeking input. As people have raised the issues with regards to the most recent FMAC call, yeah, the notice was late, and it didn't provide a lot of people opportunity to provide input, and we need to improve that moving forward. But I don't think this does that. I'd rather the council provide input in these, you know, these different actions are all at different levels. I don't see this as addressing the needs. The SBRM is fairly well developed, and we're going to be providing input with the idea that we're going to send that out pretty quickly. The Observer Omnibus is a new concept, basically brought only a meeting or two ago. So I don't actually see the value in replacing council input with a broader group of folks that include people that aren't on the council.
Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think not even a point of order, but just clarification. I think it should be the council request the chair establish a committee, because the council doesn't exactly establish committees. It's the chair that establishes the committee. So this would be that the council request that the chair.
Mary Beth.
So just one last comment, and I would just say that this in no way is meant to slow down the process the agency has started with the omnibus amendment. And it is based on a template that works in another region with these type of people, you know, the broader variety of stakeholders participating. It's a standing committee, and it certainly can be very helpful to the process.
Ellen?
I would like to respond. Tom, we do have a precedent for using outside committee council members. The Research Steering Committee, since its inception, has had industry and ENGOs and scientists outside of the council on the committee. So it's not a new concept at all. You know, this is not exactly what I had intended, because I do feel that there's too much of an overlap and too little public process in the current omnibus and even the SBRM. We're pushing this very quickly, and I believe that we need public input and buy-in to the whole process, or it's going to fall flat on its face. So if this is if we can get this through, it will at least be one step into allowing the public to think outside the box and help come up with some solutions here that everyone can live with. Thank you.
Tom?
I don't know if Gene wants to weigh in here. It would seem that we have a potential conflict of interest problem depending on what's going to come out of this committee with having observer provider companies sitting on the panel. We do have issues at the Research Steering Committee where we do have people who have research that must get reviewed, and they have to recuse themselves from those discussions. But I'm struggling to see how, if you're talking about observer coverage, and every time you talk about observer coverage, observer providers have to recuse themselves from the discussion. I'm struggling to see how they can provide any useful input without having a potential conflict of interest concern here.
Mike?
Yeah, I was having a similar thought, and even if it isn't a legal problem, I would not be in favor of formally including observer providers as a member of a committee. I'm certainly happy to have them there and have them participate on an ad-needs basis if they can provide some useful information. But I think if we go forward with this, and I am inclined to say a substitute motion along these lines could be useful. I'm swayed by Dr. Karp's comment that it has been useful in other regions as a body, but I see no reason why I would want to have the observer providers there as a member. They are a resource that could be called on as needed.
Are there any further comments? George?
But just to that last point, it seems to me one way around that might be to have an AP. That like you do with your other committees, where you could have people who are industry oriented, who could function as advisors, as an AP to a council committee. Just a thought. And a second one, these issues surrounding the observer program cut across both of our councils. So if this council is going to form some kind of a process to provide advice, you might consider including the Mid-Atlantic Council interests as well. Thank you.
Jeff.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was a point I was going to make. I mean, I guess that's one benefit of this ongoing omnibus. We've got both councils engaged fully, even though I'm not sure there were many of us that were on that last call. As Tom pointed out, that could be improved. Obviously, it needs to be. So that was my question to the maker of the motion, whether they envisioned a two-council process here of some kind.
Mary Beth?
Well, I hadn't, but that doesn't mean we couldn't. I think those points are well taken, and I don't think I need to change the language for... I suppose I could change the language. I guess on the observer providers, if it seems like most people around the table think that they would be better to not be members of the committee but participate in the process, so I would strike that for now. And... So the council requests that the chair establish an advisory observer committee that would include members of the Mid-Atlantic that would be populated. Just insert that language, Karen, if you could, after committee. An advisory observer committee that would include membership from the Mid-Atlantic and be populated by, and then it should be correct.
You okay with that, Ellen?
Absolutely.
Tom?
I just want to remind council members that hopefully, since we're adding committees, we'll eventually get to the point this afternoon where we start taking things off the priority list.
And I was going to underscore when staffing needs can be provided. Tom?
I'll just say once more on that point, I think we've already got the solution to this issue, and unfortunately it lives in several spots, and we have several actions in different places in development, but I think we're better off staffing this as the executive committee has suggested than making a wholesale change and risking a redundant process that requires additional staff. And I just think we're making this a little bit more complicated, and we'll end up with a pretty unwieldy process that people actually have a harder time engaging in as opposed to an easier time.
Jane.
Is this meant to be an advisory panel or something different?
It was my intent that it be a type of standing committee in the region that would deal with ongoing observer issues as they arise. Because I was, as I said before, I mean, I was looking at a template in a different region where it functions extremely well, and that is how they do it there. So, I mean, all committees are advisory. I mean, our species committees are advisory to the council as a whole. Our APs are advisory to the committees and the council as a whole as well. So, anyway, I don't know. You're still looking at me like you're not sure what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, I think there's, you know, council protocol, how advisory panels are selected. And you want to make sure that you're not creating something that runs into FACA, Federal Advisory Committee Act problems. So I'm just trying to clarify exactly. I'm not sure if it correlates to something that we already have right now. I don't know if, Tom, if you can think of something that this is...
I think the closest thing is what Alan commented on, the Research Steering Committee, where we have a mix of industry and, when I say industry, I mean scientists, center personnel, as well as council members on a committee. That's the closest analog I can think of off the top of my head. I guess it's possible that the risk policy work group has some of the same similar things.
But well, I just think it'd be useful just to really nail down exactly where this fits within the various types of groups that the council does have, and how, you know, I don't know I guess, the chair through the executive committee is establishing who's on this. I mean, those details can be worked out, I presume, but I'm just cautioning to make sure that you, that the council executive committee think through exactly how, what the function is of this group.
Are there any additional comments on the motion to substitute? Tom?
This is really a question, not a comment on the motion to substitute. It's still a little unclear to me what this committee is going to do and how this committee interacts with the Science Center and the agency. You know, there's a lot of decisions that are made on observer coverage and monitoring and things like that that are administrative decisions made by the agency to implement the program. Do we have any guarantee from the agency that they will commit to following the recommendations of this committee as they go through the council? You know, are we creating a committee that's going to meet and then have to farm out things to other committees in order to get things implemented through management plans and other actions? I'm just a little, those are some questions that I think we're going to have to work out as we go down the road.
Terry.
So if this goes through, would that delay like the herring work that we got coming up in January, and we would have to wait and do populate this committee before we get any of that, or is that, I'm just curious how that's going to work.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Last word, Mary Beth.
Well, I think that, you know, obviously a few questions have come up that could be worked out. And I would hope that initially one of the roles that this group could provide, if we have staff to, you know, support the process, would be to be able to provide some feedback to the agency as they work through the omnibus. And again, I'll say the intent here is not to slow down that process. And the issues relative to herring will be reviewed by the herring committee, which is already scheduled to meet, you know, in January. And I think this just could be helpful. It'd be, you know, Ellen had a list of issues there that are not going to be addressed in the omnibus amendment, and it's unclear exactly where the right place to have those discussions are. And it does seem that to have a focused group on these types of issues, a group that doesn't necessarily have to meet that many times during the year, it could meet once a year and just be a place that people know that issues relative to the observer program, this would be an appropriate venue to have, and that's all I have to say.
Okay. To those who support the motion to substitute on the board, please indicate so. Those opposed? And any abstentions? The motion carries 11-5. We're missing someone, aren't we? Who sits to your left, Mike? Oh, okay. So motion carries 11-5. Okay. Then we're back to the main motion as substituted. Those support it, please indicate so. We've just substituted. We've made a substitute, so now it's the main. It's back to the main motion. We need to vote on the main motion. Everybody clear? Okay. Those who support the main motion on the board, please indicate so. 1, 2, 3, 4. And those opposed? Well, main motion carries 11-6. Okay, Matt, good. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've actually, let me just get this off to Karen. Given the concerns that we have about adding things, I'm actually going to put forward, I think there's an opportunity here for us to maybe remove something from the list of priorities or at least streamline it. I'm going to see how this works. Given the concerns around the Monkfish Amendment 6 and the disputes and the tensions between the Mid and the New England Council, It dawned on me that I wonder if we can remove those contentious issues, the days at sea leasing and the cat share components of the amendment itself, and address the remaining through a framework adjustment. And so I've got Karen, I just emailed you a motion that would get to that. Can that go out? I can read it out if you wish. So the motion that I'd like to make is, well, there it is. That the council revise Monkfish priorities by A, removing from the Monkfish Amendment 6 provisions concerning cat shares and days at sea leasing components, and B, addressing the remaining issues through the next framework action. It seems to simplify things and better use of our time.
Are you seconded, Laura? Okay. Jeff?
I think this motion might disenfranchise the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council if you're going to move Monkfish ahead with a New England Council framework. That doesn't leave very much room for Mid-Atlantic Council involvement.
John?
Yeah, I'm opposed to this amendment, and I'll explain why. I just spent the lunch break meeting with the agency and Tom and others on trying to figure a way to get, and Chris, trying to figure a way to get the framework adjustment in front of the council in January with what we've already looked at. It's going to be very, very, very tight to even do it without all this additional stuff put in there. So I think it's important as a timing issue that we try and get the Monkfish framework adjustment in front of the committee on in January. Otherwise, all the other dates bump out if we have to wait until April, and it's jointly got to be approved. Right now, it's technically in place for January with us, February with the mid. If this additional stuff gets put into the framework, I don't think we're going to make those deadlines, and we're talking about next fall for implementation with that. So I'd respectfully be opposed to the amendment.
Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I guess my question's to Jeff. Jeff, I'm not sure why this would disenfranchise the MID, because whether it's the framework or amendment, the MID would still have to approve or disapprove. It has to go to the MID either way.
Approve or disapprove what?
If
that's my question. I you know, right now we've got a January 14th Monkfish Committee meeting on the schedule. And I think once that meeting takes place and we have a discussion about what ought to move forward and not, a framework request could come out of that joint committee. That process-wise just makes a little more sense to me personally, although I'm kind of new here at the table. But I'd rather, personally, I think we would rather go ahead and have that meeting on the 14th. That's within your priority from your earlier motion. And then, you know, if we're going to take it apart and move things out of there other than the Category H permits, I'm not kind of lost track of where that is at the moment, then we could do that following the meeting on the 14th, or 13th, excuse me.
Other council comments? Tom?
I guess I'd be interested to, absent days at sea leasing and any consideration of catch shares in this action, what's left moving forward. I mean, we tried to address in framework the framework that we're going to be voting on hopefully in January, the only issues that are all of the issues that we thought could be addressed in a framework. I mean, we made that a conscious choice. So I'm not sure what's left. And that gets me back to my preferred alternative, which is if that's really where we are, and I think it is, then we need to move this all below the line and not move forward an amendment with a couple of, or an action, with a couple of very small measures on it. I just don't think it stacks up relative to our other priorities anymore.
Mary Beth.
So that would be consistent with the comments I made earlier, which would move the Monkfish action below the line. I think we need to find room somewhere, and this is where I would find it.
Other council members? Okay, seeing no other hands, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those opposed? Motion fails, 8-9. Are there any other additions or deletions for the 2014 priorities? Mary Beth.
So I would make a motion that Monkfish Amendment 6 be below the line for 2014. And when we come to priorities again next fall, that we can discuss whether we want to continue with the action or not, but we take a break for 2014.
Second by John Bullard. All right, council discussion. Okay, talk to the group. Mike, sorry, I didn't see you.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking for guidance because I've heard that essentially everything that people view as achievable in the short term has already been folded into a framework. So I would be looking for some confirmation that is the case. I wouldn't want to see things get sidelined that are reasonably within our reach. But if in fact that's the sense of the council and the staff in particular, that we have we're not leaving things hanging that, you know, that are low hanging fruit and could actually be achieved in this year, then this would be something I could support. But I wouldn't want to support it if, in fact, something useful that's achievable is getting sidelined and delayed. So if anyone can give any guidance on that, it would be very helpful to me.
Tom?
I'm wondering if we could turn to the agency and see if Doug Crystal might be willing to weigh in here. I know that's a little unusual, but or Mike Pitney, perhaps?
Thanks. We were just conferring on this. There are a number of things that are currently in the table of contents for the amendment that are not covered by the previous motion, which said strike Daisy leasing and cat shares. So a number of things would remain. Whether those are things that we could address in a framework or would still require an amendment, I think it's a little difficult on the fly to address that. I can tell you if some of the things that were would still be on the table. There's a discussion of whether to maintain the link between groundfish days at sea and monkfish days at sea, or it's actually groundfish and or scallop days at sea and monkfish days at sea. That's in there. Category F allocations, I think some of that maybe could be done in a framework, but some of the options maybe not. Category H, the monkfish possession limits. I think some of the bigger issues, though, there was a lot of discussion by the committee at recent meetings about latent effort, and there was discussion of resetting the days at sea, resetting the baselines, essentially, making people requalify. For their days at sea or resetting days at sea based on past history. So it's not clear to me. I think those would clearly require an amendment. Those are would be fairly major issues. So I guess I don't have a clear answer for you on that everything could be done in a framework or not, but there were a number of issues that would still be in Amendment 6. Some of them are fairly significant, I guess is my take home.
Other thoughts? Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, I just look around the table here, and I think we have at least three past, one current and two past chairs of the Monkfish Committee that have all been in that position while Amendment 6 is being developed. And clearly they didn't last all that long. Nobody wants to stay. It's a dysfunctional process. It doesn't work. And it's been very contentious. It's regional in its contention, and I think that at this particular point, the progress that's been made is pitiful. We should take a break. Give everybody a chance to regroup and maybe have some discussions about what can we work together on and what can we not. And there have already been some things that have been stripped out through another framework to move it along, and I'm not going to say more. I think we need to take a break on this.
John.
Being the new Mungfist chair who hasn't chaired a meeting yet. Everybody's trying to take my work away from me before I even start here. What I would ask would be, we had a meeting at lunchtime, and we're going to have some additional staff people involved. I'm new to the chair. I think if you let the committee struggle with this, I think we're going to try and get this framework thing done. That's why I wanted to make sure that we have it stripped down as much as possible. I think the outcome of the framework adjustment is going to be favorable to industry, to the point where they likely or hopefully won't be opposed to too much of it. So I think if you gave us some deference, maybe let me and the staff use our judgment whether we ought to put additional time into the amendment. So I think I'd I guess would oppose this then. Oppose voting below the line.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the update that we got from Mike was really important. There are some issues that I had overlooked in my previous motion, so I thank you for that clarification. And I believe that these issues are important. They've been pressing, and I have the utmost confidence in our new chair, so I'm going to oppose this motion as well. We need to keep working on these issues, and my previous motion was just an attempt to try to get as much of that done forward as quickly as possible to free up time to do some of the other priorities that we have identified.
As a recovering Mungfist chairman, I have utmost faith in our new chair as well. But other thoughts? Okay. Motion on the board. Please indicate if you those who support the motion, please indicate so. And six. And those who are opposed. And those are abstaining. The motion fails 6-10-1. Are there any other additions or deletions to the 2014 priorities? So Tom.
I'm fishing for deletions here. Bluntly, we've added a committee, and we pointed out that the groundfish priorities as listed by the committee, executive committee, were going to be a stretch. I'm not sure. I don't believe we've removed anything yet, right? Sure, I've always got suggestions. But I'll defer to the council members.
See, all you got to do is bait them. Thanks, John. Terry and Tom.
Well, if we need to do something, then I would say that we could move full retention below the line in groundfish part of it. So I'd make a motion that we move full retention below the line, but leave the electronic monitoring as a priority.
Is there a second? Seconded by David Pierce. Council discussion. Terry.
I just think that that's a long way down the road, and we need to work on electronic monitoring before we're ever going to get a full retention program put into place on the boats. So it's kind of I know they kind of go hand in hand, but I think if we work out the electronic monitoring thing this year, then we may be able to implement full retention the following year. So that's my rationale. Not a very good one, but that's what I got.
We'll go for whatever you got. Further discussion on the motion on the board. PK.
Well, I would just ask Tom, I mean, how much, because it's a multi-year phased-in type of thing, I mean, is that enough, or does that do anything?
Well, full retention was intended to be in our next framework and was intended to be addressed this year, not as a multi-year approach. So it does help. I don't think it's, you know, it does help.
Other comments? Okay. PK.
I don't know. I know we have to eliminate some things, but to me, the full retention, that's the only way we're going to get to our discard rate, our erroneous discard rate. So I hate to see that get dropped off. That's all.
Any further comment? Okay, seeing none, the motion on the board, please indicate, those support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those opposed? And those abstaining? The motion carries 15-1-1. Tom, you all set? What's that? We're getting close to the end here. Is there anything else to be added or deleted? Tom?
So as I pointed out in the presentation and mentioned a couple times, there'll be a little balancing act between EBFM and Whiting actions. The Whiting specification action is a regulatory requirement, so we have to complete that this year. But the Whiting limited entry is somewhat discretionary. And while we can probably work on both at the same time, I'm just curious if the council has any advice they want to give on how to set the priorities between those two actions. My expectation is that neither one will get too much work done on it until we get the omnibus habitat amendments submitted. But we'll probably get started on that on them sometime this spring, and I'm just looking for some feedback from council members on how to evaluate the relative priority of those two.
Tom.
I appreciate the question. I think that EBFM transition is something that we've talked a lot about, and I think here we're committing to a multi-year effort for that. I think we should get off the dime on it, and I think first and foremost we should prioritize getting that committee together and having a discussion about how they're going to approach their work, how they're going to identify goals, and how we're going to evaluate coordination with other management groups. I mean, those trains have already left the station, and I think it's important for us to, if we're going to try to coordinate, to do so in a timely way. So my preference is that we'd prioritize the work of that committee because of its cross-cutting consequences on all our fisheries.
David.
With Dr. Michael Fogarty sitting in the audience from the Northeast Fishery Science Center, there's no way I would put a thumbs down on this or downgrade it, since he obviously is the center's mover and shaker regarding ecosystem research. And he's already given us a number of presentations over the years. I do agree with Tom Dempsey that this is a multi-year strategy, and we need to get going on it. Otherwise, let's bury it and not bother with it and tell Dr. Fogarty that through the center and Dr. Karp that perhaps he should be spending his time on other research at the center. And that would not be wise, because we need him and his group to continue to provide us with good scientific advice on ecosystem-based fisheries management. So, again, I would like to see it left as is in the multi-year aspect of our priority list.
Vincent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to speak a little bit about the Whiting priorities. As Tom had pointed out, we do have to have a specification package in place for this year. But also, with respect to the limited entry, that's something that's been tried since 1996, and it continually gets pushed back because of this. And with what we've done in Framework 51 for accountability measures in the small mesh fishery, there's going to be more outcry for some sort of limited entry action with this fishery, as they're going to be ratcheted down because of bycatch considerations. And just remember, it is still open access. Thank you.
Alan.
I agree with everything that has been said for both issues, but I I really have a strong opinion about the whiting fishery. It is an open access fishery. It's been pushed down below at the line year after year, as has EBFM. And I can't distinguish between the two. The only thing is, as I can see it, the whiting fishery is, if we do not start a limited entry, could become a really serious problem next year. And I really think that you cannot leave that off the list.
Frank?
Yeah, I agree on the whiting. We've been working on it a long time. We submitted it. I think the major reason it got rejected was because the qualification period went back to 1980, which the server said at the time was just too far back and they couldn't do it. I think we could dust off the document, move the dates up, and I'm not sure how much will change from what we submitted the first time. But I think that was the major reason. And George is looking at me like he's not sure. The council did all the work, and we accepted it. We moved forward, well, whoever was around back then, and we did it once. If we can dust off that document, change some dates, and not go back to 1980, maybe we can get it out the door this time and get it approved.
Matt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple things. First off, I think EBFM, when my advice to Tom would be to let's get going on EBFM. We have been working on that for almost as long as we've been working on the whiting, perhaps. Everybody else in the country is moving ahead with it. We are far behind where the rest of the where other councils are with it. The longer it takes us to get going on it, the longer it's going to take us to get it done. I understand that there's need for whiting to I understand Ellen's position about an open fishery such as that. It's concerning, but I think we can look at our landing levels and the crises we've been dealing with on this council to show that we certainly have an ecosystem problem now across the board. And if I have to choose between either addressing the whiting or EBFM, I'm going to have to lean towards focusing attention on EBFM. And we're not talking about removing things from the list right now. Tom didn't say we need to remove one from the list. It says that he's looking for guidance on how to favor allocation of staff time. Both remain on the table. So just to clarify that. We need to do this. We've done a lot of the foundational work for EBFM. We've got a science center that is keyed up and ready to go. Why not? We need it. The industry, all the industries in play here need this. This is a time for us to address this. We almost did it last year, and look at where it got us. We need to get going on this. Thank you.
Laura.
I had an additional item to go below the line, so I'll wait till this vote happens. I'm sorry.
Mike.
Yes, I strongly support the priority for ecosystem-based fisheries management. And in fact, it's probably one of my main motives for being on the council. So I would be very disappointed if we just shelf that again. I certainly also am supportive of the need to address the whiting limited entry. But frankly, I see this as a false choice. If it came down to having to remove something in order to pursue ecosystem-based fisheries management, I'd be willing to have that discussion, but I wouldn't want to just make the choice versus whiting. I think it would be a much broader discussion. I think the need and the opportunity to move forward with ecosystem-based fisheries management is so large that if, in fact, there was any serious consideration of putting it below the line, then I'd be willing to discuss removing almost anything else. Thank you.
Any other comments concerning whiting and ecosystem EBFM? Tom.
So I didn't actually count heads, but I think, generally speaking, the council is split on which one of these is most important. It might have been slightly weighed towards EBFM, but not by much. So I'll take that as some inconclusive guidance and go forward from here, and we'll balance it, and you can tell me later if we get it wrong.
Laura?
I had a thought just in terms of staff allocation, and I know won't necessarily be positive, and it's not because I'm not trying to protect the small fleet, but I just wondered, from sitting in the groundfish committee meetings and seeing the results of the most recent study again and again and again, I think that we can best protect the small fleet by putting the right amount of fish on the table rather than trying to orchestrate some sort of socialistic program. And so I do think that if we work with some of the ideas that are floating out there for restructuring the way that we create ACLs, that might go a long way to putting more fish on the table, not having these crazy reference points, actually having the right mortality put in there so that we can develop ACLs that the entire fleet can actually fish rather than leaving, 60% of the fish in the water this year. So I'm providing rationale before my motion, but my motion would be to put work on Amendment 18 below the line under groundfish.
Motion made by Laura. Is there a second? Seconded by Mary Beth. Council discussion. David.
I appreciate Laura's points, but I think I missed maybe the principal piece of logic behind her argument, which I think I misunderstood Laura, and I'll ask her to please clarify. Laura, I believe, began her motion with the point that there needs to be concern about the small vessels, the small boat fleet. So with that need being apparent, and with our having spent quite a bit of time trying to address that need, with Amendment 18 being part of the way in which we will address it, putting Amendment 18 below the line seems inconsistent with that desire to, you know, be more aggressive with our protection of the small boat fleet, which is already vanishing. As Laura mentioned, by the data I've seen, it's more than in peril. So I have to oppose the motion for that reason. I continue to work through the Groundfish Committee and in other ways to try to deal with the needs of the small boat fleet. And by putting Amendment 18 aside for a while, that works against what I'm trying to do within the state and also here on the council.
Terry.
Yeah, I disagree with the whole premise that Amendment 18 is designed to protect the small boat fleet. The way I read it, it's designed to protect the entire fleet. We're losing as many big boats as we are little boats. And it doesn't matter what size your boat is. We're losing them all. So, I could support putting that down below the line for 2014. We're still going to work on it, I'm sure, but I could definitely support putting that down below the line for 2014, and we have bigger fish to fry, I think.
Laura, do you want to respond?
Oh, I just wanted to say that logic is not always working in my favor, but I am trying to connect the dots. And when I sit and listen time and time again, the issue is not small boat versus big boat. It's that we are setting catch levels, especially on choke species, with really questionable modeling going on. And so if we can work to recreate the strategies we used to come up with ACLs, that's going to keep the whole fleet fishing much more than spending time and time and time uncovering and setting more restrictions and rules on this fishery. And I say uncovering, it's who owns what and how permits are stacked and doing all sorts of sort of socialistic regulating. And when really a lot could be solved for big boats and small boats by putting the right amount of fish of the right species on the table with some actual accurate modeling and science. I mean, really, where's the priority that says let's take a look at the yellowtail assessment? I'm hoping that's embodied somewhere here. But sticking to the point, I do think that we could achieve your goals, David, in helping the small boats without creating a whole socialistic system through Amendment 18.
Tom.
Thanks. I wanted to speak to this motion, but before I do, I want to make sure I understood where we ended up on the issue with regards to EBFM. Absent any motion, these are the council's priorities, and I just wanted to make sure that EBFM wasn't sort of a half priority or downweighted. We're identifying that these are the council's priorities, and we're going to juggle whatever staff resources we can to get these done. I just didn't want to end the last conversation with the idea that somehow there was an asterisk next to EBFM. Recognizing that, as Mike said, all these things are competing for staff resources. These are our priorities as identified, and EBFM is above the line for this coming year. To this issue, I think we've talked a lot about Amendment 18 in terms of measures that people or we perceive to be in the amendment at this time. There actually are almost no measures in this amendment. What we did this year is address goals, and that actually came up through a pretty, I think, valuable process whereby we got a ton of groundfish advisory panel input, and I think we expanded and improved the goals for this action. Caps will always be a part of the discussion. It's basically what started this discussion, but I think we've expanded beyond that to things that a lot of people, including many in the industry, see significant value in: increasing flexibility, increasing the opportunity to leverage groundfish into other opportunities. You know, I actually think Amendment 18 needs to stay above the line. I think it's expanded appropriately to meet the sort of evolving challenges in the groundfish fishery, and it's going to include a caps discussion that some people don't want to have, maybe all of us don't want to have, but needs to happen and needs to move forward in a transparent way. So I support keeping Amendment 18 above the line for those reasons. I understand the frustration with it, but we're at a point where we need to start actually putting measures in support of those goals in the amendment. And I think this is going to be an important year, and I think there's a lot of potential for the industry through Amendment 18 to get more flexible, to get more nimble, and to be more profitable in the future. I'm an optimist.
Doug. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, this has been a priority for quite a number of years, and progress has been painfully slow on this. And as I've been reading some of the Groundfish Committee minutes, I think we're at a point where there's going to be, as Tom said, a lot of progress made. And I would totally oppose this. I understand Laura's trying to find some relief for some of the staff work, particularly on groundfish. But I think this is a very important amendment that needs to go out and needs to go out to the public with the measures that we will have in it. And we need to move forward on this. As I said, I think we're right at a crux right now where I think it's the waterfall is suddenly going to start flowing in the Groundfish Committee. So thank you very much. I'm going to pose this.
Ellen?
I understand where Laura's coming from completely also, but I have really strong opinions on the public process, and there's been a huge amount of public input on this amendment, and I really think that if we put this below the line, that we are going to create more public strife about the issue, and I think that this needs to go forward. We need to finalize it and get it moving. It's taken way too long, and I would be very upset if it went below the line and we didn't work on it this year. Thank you. Hopefully we'll finish it this year.
John.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I speak in favor of keeping Amendment 18 above the line. I think, in my opinion, Amendment 18, more than anything else, helps us define in public session the vision of the fishery for groundfish. And it's something I heard more than anything in all the listening sessions that I conducted, that this was important for us to do and important for us to do in public. And there are always going to be people who can win at this if there is no public discussion. And there are always people who would not like this discussion to take place, and always will offer reasons for it not to take place. And but I think it needs to, and this council is invested in getting information and having the debate. It does take a while. It can be frustrating. I understand the frustrations about it, but it's important to have. And Amendment 18 is the right vehicle. We ought to keep at it. It has its frustrations, but we're making progress. We should keep at it.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Tom made a really salient point about, one, I agree with him in clarifying that EBFM is something that, you know, is a council priority. It's being used elsewhere in the world. And I see EBFM and Amendment 18 as two sides of the same coin. We are trying to support an industry at a time when we're trying to figure out how to get this ecosystem back to where we can get it. And to put Amendment 18 down below the line, Alan, I think, was absolutely right. It would be an utter betrayal of this council to the people that have come out and given their time and their energies to support it. I think both need to be made council priorities. I hope Amendment 18 will stay above the line. We need to work on these things together. They're both the same issue.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think everybody has an opinion that's pretty fine-tuned on this one, so I would just ask that you call the question.
Go one more hand, Dave Preble, and then we'll...
Yeah, thank you. I'll be very quick. Amendment 18, when it first was proposed several years ago, I made no secret of the fact that I was hostile to it for much of the same reasons that Laura brings up. But the changes that have been made in its direction over the last year haven't completely changed my mind, but certainly I'm much less hostile than I was. I did not like in the early days the idea, was like Laura was talking about, of pre-designing a fleet in violation of the rules of economics. But that isn't where we are now, and I think that Amendment 18 now should move forward and should be above the line. But I was concerned, just as Tom Dempsey mentioned, with where we left the ecosystem-based management. I didn't join in it because I've made my position on that so well known over the years. But when he seemed ambivalent about the importance of EBFM, I just wanted to once again reiterate the fact that I think Mike is exactly right. Ecosystem-based fishery management is our only route out of the single-species management that's been a completely sterile way to manage our resources, our fishery resources. The fish don't just swim in the ocean without contact with everything else in the ocean. And what we've done is, over the years, we have destroyed isn't the right word. We have completely altered the marine food web in ways that do not favor productivity of the fish species that we need to conduct our industry. And we won't get there until we do develop a suitable, proper ecosystem-based fishery management plan that considers all of these species with relation to one another. And that's particularly true now that we see climate change shuffling the deck. So I don't want to belabor this because I've addressed it so much in the past. I would really be disappointed if ecosystem-based fishery management weren't at the top of the list and not something that we're just sort of ambivalent about. It's our only path to get out of the continuing crisis that we have always been in, it seems, from at least a third of a century ago. Thank you.
Okay, certainly the executive committee recommended the preparation of an ecosystem-based management plan as one of the 2014 priorities. I haven't heard anyone throughout the day saying anything less than that, and we've got an enthusiastic new chair who I believe will lead us into the future. So to the motion on the board, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those who are opposed. Three to 14. Motion fails, 3 to 14. Are there any other additions or deletions to our 2004?
Just a clarification here. EBFM is above the line. We'll pursue EBFM. But the only way we could get this entire list of priorities done is by juggling staff time and having staff work on more than one thing at a time over the course of the year. And so when we're juggling that, I asked for some questions on how to prioritize it. And while a number of people spoke in favor of EBFM being a higher priority, others spoke in favor of Whiting, limited entry being a higher priority. We will continue to make progress on both, but we're going to have to shuffle back and forth a little bit on those.
Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of things. One is I'm very pleased to see that EBFM remains above the line, and I would have been quite upset if that had not been the case. But I expected that it would stay above the line because all of the comments that I've heard today and in the time that I've been here support the Council's overarching desire to move in that direction. The Centre is certainly very well positioned to work with the Council. It's not going to be something that happens overnight, as everybody's mentioned. I'm very, very proud of the scientists that we have at the center who can support this and the connections that we have with partners in other academic institutions, in the industry, and throughout the region. So I think that there's a very exciting and important opportunity for us all to move forward in that area. So I'd like to thank you all for that. One other small comment, if I may, Mr. Chair, has to do with the action that was taken to move for retention below the line and keep EM above the line. I just want to point out to the Council that at least one of the major options for moving forward with EM is one that would tie for retention to electronic monitoring. So that action has reduced the flexibility for EM implementation to some extent, just to make sure that everybody understands that. Thank you.
Mike.
Yeah, on that last point, I understood that electronic monitoring was still above the line. It was just the full retention part of it. So the preparation for potentially something like full retention is, in terms of technology, is still a priority. A quick response to Tom, and I don't want to belabor this, in terms of the priority for ecosystem-based fisheries management, I think that a number of us, we all understand that staff have to be juggled and that, as I said before, these priorities are aspirational, and we have to accept that the realities of what staff can do and what comes up at any point in time are going to ultimately determine how far we get. I at least was objecting to the trade-off being made uniquely between ecosystem-based management and whiting. I think there are broader issues in terms of how staff are distributed in terms of achieving all of these policies, and I think that in reality that will be the case, that the staff will have to, or Tom will have to manage the staff to address all of the priorities given the resources he has. My final comment on ecosystem-based fisheries management is I'm very glad to hear Bill Karp's positive reaction, because frankly I think in terms of the workload and the progress that will be made, it's probably more dependent on the efforts of the center and the center staff than it is on council staff or probably any council member. So I think with that positive attitude coming out of the center, there's a great opportunity to make very good progress. Thank you.
Okay, are there any final comments on our 2014 priorities? I'm going to call a question quick. Can you scroll up, Karen, to what the main motion is? Just so everyone's clear upon what we're voting on. So what we're looking for is a main motion, which was John's, as amended. And I'm not sure that... Tom?
I think we already voted for that. And then several subsequent motions were voted on. But I think we already passed that. That was quick.
Just, I mean, before we... If that's the... consensus of the council without objection. All right, after conferring with Tom and my vice chair lawyer, it's our sense that motion 1E addresses the main motion, and we've made a number of subsequent motions which would amend that. So
I think we're done.
According to the executive director, we're done with priorities. Thank you. Thank you all for what is always a very difficult discussion.